tastes and mode of life. For everyone who, after renouncing this world, turns back to his old desires and reverts to his former likings, asserts in heart and act the very same thing that they did, and says, "It was well with me in Egypt." And I am afraid that the number of these will be as large as that of the multitudes of backsliders of whom we read under Moses. For though they were reckoned as 603,000 armed men who came out of Egypt, of this number not more than 2 entered the land of promise. Wherefore we should be careful to take the examples of goodness from those who are few and far between, because according to that figure of which we have spoken in the gospel, many are called, but few are said to be chosen. 141. A renunciation, then, in body alone, and a mere change of place from Egypt, will not do us any good, if we do not succeed in achieving that renunciation in heart, which is far higher and more valuable. For of that mere bodily renunciation of which we have spoken, the Apostle declares as follows: "Though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and give my body to be burned, but have not charity, it profiteth me nothing." 142. And the blessed Apostle would never have said this had it not been that he foresaw by the Spirit that some who had given all their goods to feed the poor would not be able to attain to evangelical perfection and the lofty heights of charity, because while pride or impatience ruled over their hearts, they were not careful to purify themselves from their former sins and unrestrained habits, and on that account could never attain to that love of God which never faileth. And these, as they fall short in this second stage of renunciation, can still less reach that third stage, which is most certainly far higher. But consider too in your minds with great care the fact that he did not simply say, "If I bestow my goods," for it might perhaps be thought that he spoke of one who had not fulfilled the command of the gospel, but had kept back something for himself, as some half-hearted persons do. But he says, "Though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor," i.e., even if my renunciation of those earthly riches be perfect. And to this renunciation he adds something still greater: "And though I give my body to be burned, but have not charity, I am nothing." As if he had said, in other words, "Though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor in accordance with that command in the gospel, where we are told, 'If thou wilt be perfect, go sell all that thou hast and give to the poor, and thou shalt have treasure in heaven.'" 143. Renouncing them so as to keep back nothing at all for myself, and though to this distribution of my goods I should, by the burning of my flesh, add martyrdom, so as to give up my body for Christ, and yet be impatient, or passionate, or envious, or proud, or excited by wrongs done by others, or seek what is mine, or indulge in evil thoughts, or not be ready and patient in bearing all that can be inflicted on me, this renunciation and the burning of the outer man will profit me nothing, while the inner man is still involved in the former sins, because, while in the fervor of the early days of my conversion, I made light of the mere worldly substance, which is said to be not good or evil in itself, but indifferent, I took no care to cast out in like manner the injurious powers of a bad heart, or to attain to that love of the Lord which is patient, which is kind, which envieth not, is not puffed up, is not soon angry, dealeth not perversely, seeketh not her own, thinketh no evil, which beareth all things, endureth all things. 144. And which lastly never suffers him who follows after it to fall by the deceitfulness of sin. Chapter 8. Of our very own possessions, in which the beauty of the soul is seen, or its foulness. We ought then to take the utmost care that our inner man, as well, may cast off and make away with all those possessions of its sins, which it acquired in its former life, which, as they continually cling to body and soul, are our very own, and unless we reject them and cut them off while we are still in the flesh, will not cease to accompany us after death. For as good qualities, or charity itself, which is their source, may be gained in this world, and after the close of this life make the man who loves it lovely and glorious, so our faults transmit to that eternal remembrance a mind darkened and stained with foul colors. For the beauty or ugliness of the soul is the product of its virtues or its vices, the color it takes from which either makes it so glorious that it may well hear from the prophet. And the king shall have pleasure in thy beauty, 145, or so black and foul and ugly that it must surely acknowledge the stench of its shame and say, my wounds stink and are corrupt because of my foolishness, 146. And the Lord himself says to it, why is not the wound of the daughter of my people closed, 147. And therefore these are our very own possessions, which continually remain with the soul, which no king and no enemy can either give or take away from us. These are our very own possessions, which not even death itself can part from the soul, but by renouncing which we can attain to perfection, and by clinging to which we shall suffer the punishment of eternal death. Chapter 9. Of Three Sorts of Possessions. Riches and possessions are taken in Holy Scripture in three different ways, i.e., as good, bad, and indifferent. Those are bad, of which it is said, the rich have wanted and have suffered hunger, 148. And woe unto you that are rich, for ye have received your consolation, 149. And to have cast off these riches is the height of perfection, and a distinction which belongs to those poor, who are commended in the gospel by the Lord, saying, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven, 150. And in the psalm, this poor man cried, and the Lord heard him, 151. And again, the poor and needy shall praise thy name, 152. Those riches are good to acquire, which is the work of great virtue and merit, and the righteous possessor of which is praised by David, who says, the generation of the righteous shall be blessed. Glory and riches are in his house, and his righteousness remaineth forever, 153. And again, the ransom of a man's life are his riches, 154. And of these riches it is said in the Apocalypse to him who has them not, and to his shame is poor and naked, I will begin, says he, to vomit thee out of my mouth, because thou sayest I am rich and wealthy, and have need of nothing, and knowest not that thou art wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. I counsel thee to buy of me gold, fire tried, that thou mayest be made rich, and mayest be clothed in white garments, and that the shame of thy nakedness may not appear. 155. There are some also which are indifferent, i.e., which may be made either good or bad, for they are made either one or the other in accordance with the will and character of those who use them, of which the blessed apostle says, charge the rich of this world not to be high-minded, nor to trust in the uncertainty of riches, but in God, who giveth us abundantly all things to enjoy, to do good, to give easily, to communicate to others, to lay up and store for themselves a good foundation, that they may lay hold on the true life. 156. These are what the rich man in the gospel kept, and never distributed to the poor. While the beggar Lazarus was lying at his gate and desiring to be fed with his crumbs, and so he was condemned to the unbearable flames and everlasting heat of hellfire. 157. Chapter 10. That none can become perfect merely through the first rate of renunciation. In leaving then these visible goods of the world, we forsake not our own wealth, but that which is not ours, although we boast of it as either gained by our own exertions or inherited by us from our forefathers. For as I said, nothing is our own, save this only which we possess with our heart, and which cleaves to our soul, and therefore cannot be taken away from us by anyone. But Christ speaks in terms of censure of those visible riches, to those who clutch them as if they were their own, and refuse to share them with those in want. If ye have not been faithful in what is another's, who will give you what is your own? 158. Plainly then, it is not only daily experience which teaches us that these riches are not our own, but this saying of our Lord also, by the very title which it gives them. But concerning visible, 159, and worthless riches, Peter says to the Lord, Lo, we have left all and followed thee. What shall we have therefore? 160. When it is clear that they had left nothing but their miserable broken nets. And unless this expression, all, is understood to refer to that renunciation of sins, which is really great and important, we shall not find that the apostles had left anything of any value, or that the Lord had any reason for bestowing on them the blessing of so great glory, that they were allowed to hear from him that, in the regeneration, when the Son of Man shall sit on the throne of his glory, ye also shall sit upon 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. 161. If then those who have completely renounced their earthly and visible goods cannot for sufficient reason attain to apostolic charity, nor climb with readiness and vigor to that third stage of renunciation, which is still higher and belongs to but few, what should those think of themselves, who do not even make that first step, which is very easy, a thorough one, but keep together with their old want of faith, their former sordid riches, and fancy that they can boast of the mere name of monks? The first renunciation, then, of which we spoke, is of what is not our own, and therefore is not enough of itself to confer perfection on the renunciant, unless he advances to the second, which is really and truly a renunciation of what belongs to us. And when we have made sure of this by the expulsion of all our faults, we shall mount to the heights of the third renunciation also, whereby we rise above not merely all those things which are done in this world, or especially belong to men, but even that whole universe around us which is esteemed so glorious, and shall with heart and soul look down upon it as subject to vanity, and destined soon to pass away. As we look, as the Apostle says, not on those things which are seen, but on those which are not seen. For the things that are seen are temporal, and the things which are not seen are eternal. 162. That so we may be found worthy to hear that highest utterance which was spoken to Abraham, and come into a land which I will show thee. 163. Which clearly shows that unless a man has made those three former renunciations with all earnestness of mind, he cannot attain to this fourth, which is granted as a reward and privilege to one whose renunciation is perfect, that he may be found worthy to enter the land of promise, which no longer bears for him the thorns and thistles of sins, which, after all the passions have been driven out, is acquired by purity of heart even in the body, and which no good deeds or exertions of men's efforts can gain, but which the Lord himself promises to show, saying, And come into the land which I will show to thee, which clearly proves that the beginning of our salvation results from the call of the Lord, who says, Get thee out from thy country, and that the completion of perfection and purity is his gift in the same way, as he says, And come into the land which I will show thee, i.e., not one you yourself can know or discover by your own efforts, but one which I will show not only to one who is ignorant of it, but even to one who is not looking for it. And from this we clearly gather that as we hasten to the way of salvation, through being stirred up by the inspiration of the Lord, so too it is under the guidance of his direction and illumination that we attain to the perfection of the highest bliss. Chapter 11. A Question on the Free Will of Man and the Grace of God. Germanus. Where then is there room for free will, and how is it ascribed to our efforts that we are worthy of praise, if God both begins and ends everything in us which concerns our salvation? Chapter 12. The Answer on the Economy of Divine Grace, with Free Will Still Remaining in Us. Papnutius. This would fairly influence us, if in every work and practice the beginning and end were everything, and there were no middle in between. And so as we know that God creates opportunities of salvation in various ways, it is in our power to make use of the opportunities granted to us by heaven more or less earnestly. For just as the offer came from God who called him, "Get thee out of thy country," so the obedience was on the part of Abraham who went forth. And as the fact that the saying, "Come into the land," was carried into action, was the work of him who obeyed, so the addition of the words, "which I will show thee," came from the grace of God, who commanded or promised it. But it is well for us to be sure that although we practice every virtue with unceasing efforts, yet with all our exertions and zeal we can never arrive at perfection, nor is mere human diligence and toil of itself sufficient to deserve to reach the splendid reward of bliss, unless we have secured it by means of the cooperation of the Lord, and his directing our heart to what is right. And so we ought every moment to pray and say with David, "Order my steps in thy paths, that my footsteps slip not." 164. "And he hath set my feet upon a rock and ordered my goings." 165. That he who is the unseen ruler of the human heart may vouchsafe to turn to the desire of virtue that will of ours, which is more readily inclined to vice, either through want of knowledge or what is good, or through the delights of passion. And we read this in a verse in which the prophet sings very plainly, "Being pushed, I was overturned that I might fall," where the weakness of our free will is shown, "and the Lord sustained me." 166. Again, this shows that the Lord's help is always joined to it, and by this, that we may not be altogether destroyed by our free will when he sees that we have stumbled. He sustains and supports us, as it were, by stretching out his hand. And again, "If I said my foot was moved," viz., from the slippery character of the will, "thy mercy, O Lord, helped me." 167. Once more he joins on the help of God to his own weakness, as he confesses that it was not owing to his own efforts, but to the mercy of God, that the foot of his faith was not moved. And again, "According to the multitude of the sorrows which I had in my heart, which sprang most certainly from my free will, thy comforts have refreshed my soul." 168. I.e., thy coming through, thy inspiration into my heart, and laying open the view of future blessings which thou hast prepared for them who labor in thy name. They not only removed all anxiety from my heart, but actually conferred upon it the greatest delight. And again, "Had it not been that the Lord helped me, my soul had almost dwelt in hell." 169. He certainly shows that through the depravity of this free will, he would have dwelt in hell, had he not been saved by the assistance and protection of the Lord. For, by the Lord, and not by free will, are a man's steps directed, and although the righteous fall, at least by free will, he shall not be cast away. And why? Because the Lord upholdeth him with his hands. 170. And this is to say with the utmost clearness, none of the righteous are sufficient of themselves to acquire righteousness, unless every moment when they stumble and fall, the divine mercy supports them with his hands, that they may not utterly collapse and perish when they have been cast down through the weakness of free will. Chapter 13. That the ordering of our way comes from God. And truly the saints have never said that it was by their own efforts that they secured the direction of the way in which they walked in their course towards advance and perfection of virtue, but rather they prayed for it from the Lord, saying, "Direct me in thy truth, and direct my way in thy sight." 171. But someone else declares that he discovered this very fact not only by faith, but also by experience, and as it were from the very nature of things. "I know, O Lord, that the